if I've joined something and it's not a good fit, that I need to then step away, because it's better to not join an organization if you can't contribute. But at the same time, it's worth trying, because, you know, if you try something new, you either have success or you have a story. So I have a lot of stories.
Welcome to The Champion Life with Kurt Tucker. My purpose is to love, encourage, and empower you to become the champion leader God created you to be and live what I like to call the champion life, a life of abundance, freedom, and victory, where you, my friend, are winning in every area of your life, your faith, your family, your fitness, and your finances. I'm your host, Kurt Tucker. Let's have some fun. All righty. Well, welcome back to another episode of the Champion Life Podcast. I'm your host, Kurt Tucker. And today I got a great episode, an episode that actually for the last week I've been looking forward to, because it's a little bit of a different type of episode. Typically, I interview a lot of entrepreneurs. We talk a lot of different things on this podcast. And today I've got, you know, an interesting story, and we'll share a little bit about this, about how our relationship came together. But I've got a great man of God, husband, father, leader on the podcast with me. So Chris Epley, welcome to the podcast. How you doing today?
Well, I'm doing fantastic, Kurt. Thank you for having me. I really, I'm privileged and honored to be here. I listen to your podcast, and to be a guest on it, it's truly, it's great.
Man, that is awesome. Well, I tell you what, I've got a line of questions, but I really want to encourage the audience today, because you're a fascinating guy. You're doing a lot of incredible things right now. I am very intrigued in what you do from a professional standpoint. We were talking about that. And really, that's kind of how we met, you know. And I want to share with the viewers a little bit of like our perspective on how we met, because I think it's been about maybe 4 years now that we met. So I'll share a little bit of the story on my perspective, and then I'll have you maybe share your story, because really our relationship has kind of evolved from afar. We've never met in person, which I think is cool in itself, right? Because sometimes it's really neat how we can bring relationships together, you know, and the world can really be a small place. And so about 4 years ago, I looked out my front door and I saw this lady just sitting in her car. And then I went out to ask her, hey, is everything okay? And she was out. She said, I'm out campaigning for my son. And she was kind of lost. She didn't exactly know where she was. And so she put me on the phone with you, and we had a conversation, and I helped her kind of get back on track on, you know, kind of where she was going. I just remember, I think it was maybe we talked, or you had sent me kind of a letter or something that just said, hey, thank you. And we got to just talking over the phone, and you were telling me a little bit about yourself. Is your mom still out there, your number one fan, by the way? Because, man, she was like such an encourager for you, man, which I think is so amazing. So how's mom doing? And do you remember that day, by the way?
Yeah, absolutely. I do. My mom's doing great. She's my campaign manager, if you will. But that was about 4 years ago. And I had sent her on a journey to drop off some campaign literature for me. And it was up near your neighborhood, but not in your neighborhood. And she's independent. So instead of calling me saying I'm lost, you had approached her. And the next call I received was actually from you, I believe, on her phone, and saying that you straightened her out, you got her in the right direction. And so we do still talk about that, because that's a campaign memory. You know, when you're on a little journey of whatever it may be, it's those little stories that you remember from time to time. So we talk about that because, you know, we see each other almost every day.
Oh, that's so awesome. That's so awesome that, you know, it's amazing when you have a fan in your life, when you have somebody that, you know, believes in you, right? And is just encouraging you all the time. My mom was that for me. As you can see in my office, I have two pictures, you know, one of my wife, Rachel, and I, and one of my mom and I when I was a little boy. And so always grateful and thankful for that. So, well, let's do this, Chris, is I want to dig in a little bit and talk a little bit about you, because, man, I mean, you've accomplished a lot, you know, and what I love to do on this podcast, and I called it the Champion Life Podcast, for one reason, because I wanted to interview people that I believe are living what I call the champion life, right? And I define that as a life of abundance and freedom and victory, where they're winning in every single area. And I know before we started recording, I kind of shared that with you, that I don't want to just interview somebody who maybe they're making a lot of money in business, but their family is all out of whack. You know, I coach a lot of entrepreneurs for a living and do coaching and consulting. And one of the things that I tell every man that I coach is, hey, listen, like, we got to make sure that, you know, the walls behind your walls, your four walls, your family, your faith, all those things are foundational. Because if we just make a lot of money, but we don't have all those things correct, you know, at the end of the day, success without fulfillment, it's the ultimate failure. And so, you know, for you, I love the fact that you're a family guy, man. Like, you've got a lot going on, you know, from a professional standpoint, but there's a lot of things that you do right. And I love the letter that you sent to me last year. I think it was in January, where you'd said, hey, you know, Kurt, I get up early, like 5 a.m, and I'm out. I've got these disciplines and thing that you live your life by. So if you wouldn't mind, you know, Chris, the first question I have for you is, how important is for you having success in all these key areas that you are, as a husband, as a father, as a judge, you know, all these different things? How does your faith and that desire to be excellent in what you do drive you on a daily basis? How important is that to you in having what I would call success, you know, in, you know, all the things that you do?
Well, I kind of live by a couple of sayings. One of that I like a lot is, never let your memories be greater than your dreams. So I'm always trying to move forward in anything that I do. Another thing too is, I hope and consider myself to be a humble person. I believe you're either humble or you're about to be. And so I've had that second time many times. I played sports in high school. I played college soccer. And so when I speak about humility, you know, I would tell you this: I was a Division III all-conference soccer player. And then I met my wife and found out she was a Division I all-conference swimmer. And my son is a Division II lacrosse player in college. And my daughter signed a scholarship to be a Division I swimmer. So I am have to be humble because of my family. But on the other side of that too is, they support me, but I completely support them. You know, if there's an event that my kids had when they were growing up, I was there. Or if there's anything that my wife is doing, I make sure I'm there in support of her, because it goes both ways. It's a relationship. It's a partnership. It's all about communication, I think, too, because we both get really busy throughout the day and into the evening. And so we have that important communication. You mentioned that I get up early. It's true. I actually moved to a 4:30 now, so I have a little bit more time in the morning, but I usually just read. Some people are like, what do you do? I was like, I don't know. But from 4:30 to 6, when my wife gets up, that's my alone time. And sometimes I force myself to stay in bed till 4:30 because I just like to get the morning started. And so I do a variety of things, but mainly it's just sitting and reading. So I really enjoy that morning time. Now, when the early evening comes, that's a little bit tough for me to stay awake, but I just know that's me. That's my time. And I can't say I've always been that way. I mean, college and even after college, I was not an early riser like that. But when you're raising kids and you need some alone time, that's what it is for me. And so, you know, those are a couple of principles I just talked about, but also this other idea that the scariest place to be is the same place as last year. So, you know, if I don't have growth in my life in some fashion. And so I think, you know, as we get older, it's hard to define what growth means to you and to all of us. And I think that if we're really working on our relationships and our friendships, you know, the other concept I like is, be friends for friendship. That's it. Friendship should not be transactional in any way. So be friends for friendship. That's it. And so I think that takes time too in our relationships. And so, you know, when I think of my family and my mom's involvement, the great thing about having my mom involved in my life, if I give a presentation and she's there, she always says how great I did. And I'll tell you what, I didn't do great every time. I just know I didn't. So thankfully, I have others that may be in the audience that can be like, hey, this is what you need to work on. And I'm open to that 100%, because, you know, we can always get better at everything we do. And we always can get better at least 1% every day or every year, however it may be. It's just hard to quantify. But if I can get better some way, And I know that I can learn from people older than me. I can learn from my peers, and I can learn from people younger than I am, because that's where learning takes place.
Where do you think that desire for excellence? Because when I hear you talk, Chris, you know, what comes to me is this desire for excellence, not perfection, you know, because I think we both know as men of faith that perfection is impossible. There's only one who's perfect, and that was Christ. But there's this desire of excellence. You know, it's uncommon for people to get up that early, right? Because there's a discipline that takes place to get up early. You know, my original mentor years ago, Jay Meyer, who played college basketball, who was a very successful entrepreneur. When we first met, one of the things that he taught me is he said, Kurt, you know, if you really want to truly have success in business, you know, one of the things you're going to have to learn how to do is get up early, because there's going to be an incredible demand upon your time being married with four kids, where at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, everybody's going to be vying for your time. There's going to be kids to get to this practice, or if you want to be coaching your kids and be involved in their games, it's this. But at 5 a.m., nobody's vying for your time. Nobody's blowing up your phone. The demands aren't there. And that's the time that you're going to have alone in the morning to be with God, to be with your thoughts, to really analyze your life. So where do you feel like for you, and I know you played college soccer, regardless of whether it was division, whatever, that takes a level of discipline, right? So where do you feel like for you, Chris, this level of excellence kind of came from in your life? Did it start young? Was it something that your parents instilled in you? Like, where did that come from?
I think it came from watching others, and it wasn't natural to me. I was never the biggest guy, the fastest guy in any sport, but it does take that self-discipline to do other things too. To back up too, when you talk about perfection, you know, some say perfectionism is fear in disguise. So we're not going to be perfect, right? And sometimes we won't be excellent or won't be great. You know, sometimes people say, what makes a good judge or good lawyer? Because that's my profession. It's two simple things in my mind: to be on time and be prepared. So I think that's what life is too, is be on time, be prepared for whatever it is you may be going to. I think that's really important, those two things. And to me, you know, you're either early or you're late. So being on time, to me, I'm early. You know, it just is. So I get up in the early in the morning. And frankly, I don't usually check my phone after 9 p.m. or before 6 a.m. And that takes a lot of discipline, because I'll get up at 4:30 and I'll wonder what's going on out there. And I don't do it. I just don't do it anymore, because I think that's really important, that self-control and self-discipline. You just have to have it. I don't know necessarily where it came from, but my parents were married for 49 years. My dad passed 10 years ago, and he was my best man, figuratively and literally, in my wedding. So I got to see good role models. And it's, you know, it's many times it's not what we say, it's our actions, you know, it's our works that's important. And so, you know, and again, we all make mistakes. I try to limit my mistakes to one per day if I can, but then I own them. You know, if I make a mistake, I own it. You have to. And so it's the same with my family or my wife. You know, if something comes up, we try to make sure we get it out in the open and figure out what's going on. And some of that's an acknowledgement. You know, if I say to my wife, Eileen, I had a bad day today, I just need some time, and vice versa, it may go that way. We may do that, or she's a physical therapist. And so it's a different profession than mine. And talk about ambitious. My wife's a physical therapist in the schools, owns a small embroidery business in our basement, and just finished coaching high school swimming. That's a 4-month endeavor, including the state championship last week, where she took 10 kids. And so that's pretty impressive. So when you think of humility, you know, I'm right there with it. But it's also, you know, I'm not trying to keep up with, we don't try to keep up with each other. Rather, we support each other and we talk about it. Hey, I'm thinking about doing this. What do you think? Yes, we can do that. Or, well, we've got something else a little bit more important. And so I make sure that that comes first, is that family first. And I also like that phrase too. You know, it's the idea, like, if you're a speaker, it's really not about you, it's about the connection to the audience. So you want to make sure that, you know, if you're talking about something that, you know, people don't remember what they say or you say, they remember how you made them feel. And so I try to keep that in the back of my mind too. I also recognize that not everyone's going to like us, like me. You know, it just is what it is, and I can't control it. I came across a story or a book about called FOPO, fear of people's opinions. And so it's important not to have that fear of people's opinions, because everyone's got one. And and we recognize that we're not always liked so much. But as long as we are being ourselves, I'd rather be disliked because I am who I am, rather than acting to be somebody different.
That's so good. You know, my wife, Rachel, says other people's opinions are none of our business. You know, I do obviously a lot of social media, you know, influencing. And one of the things that I've learned is sometimes just to ignore the comments, you know, because everybody has an opinion and they're going to put it out there, especially in the world we live in today where they can on the internet. And my pastor, Andy, you know, Warren says this, that the only difference between manipulation and motivation is your motive. So as long as I know that my heart is always pure, that I'm always trying to add value to somebody's life, I'm always trying, you know, my mission, you know, Chris, I always say, is to love and encourage and empower people to be the champion that God created them to be. And so whether that means helping a man become a better leader as a husband, become a better business person, become better in his career, or develop leaders in my church, like whatever it is, you know, every day I'm just asking that God would create in me a pure heart and a heart where I am, you know, motivating men, so to speak, with the right motives, not that they would do anything for me. Like you had mentioned about the friendship. It's kind of like a marriage. It's the same thing. Like, you know, a marriage is a place to give, not get, not take. Nobody wants a relationship where somebody's always trying to be able to take from them. And so just having that pure motive all the time to just give and serve people, right? You know what I mean? I'm in the business world, where a lot of times I'll just tell people, like, it's the Zig Ziglar quote, if you help enough people get what they want, you can have everything you want. So all you got to really focus on is serving people, you know, and doing that. So, well, you said a lot of awesome stuff. And you know, obviously it sounds like, you know, with the way that you lead in your marriage with Eileen and just the communication, you mentioned that, you know, the importance of communication and you guys talking about things, because, you know, you obviously have a very demanding career. You know, I can imagine, as, you know, an attorney for many years and now a judge, you know, let me ask this question. What does a day in the life of Chris look like? You know, you're getting up super early. What are some other habits and rituals that you kind of live by that you can kind of say, you know, once again, I'm not perfect, but I found that these key things, Kurt, in my life keep me grounded. You know, they help me to be the best version of Chris. What would you say are some of those habits and rituals that you live by on a daily basis?
Well, you know, I like that idea that I came across some years ago called the third space. You know, it's where you work, that's one space, where you live, one space. And where's that third space? Where do you get your energy? Where do you get your free time? Where do you do your thing? And for some people, it could be anywhere. It could be church for some people, in the fellowship and so forth. But for me, many times it's my bicycle. So I typically bike to work every day. If it's raining, I don't bike because I don't have a way to get dry, but it's downhill on the way here, so I don't need a shower. And yeah. I change when I get in. I put my bike in my office. And I work, and then I ride home. And so that's a little bit of exercise. I try to get to the gym a couple of days a week too. Again, because that, I consider that, if that's the right term, my third space. I'm neither at home nor I'm at the office. I'm just getting my own energy by that time by myself. And it's typically by myself, but it's all about that preparation too. Like every morning, if I'm going to bike to work, I got to check the weather. You know, because the coldest I've been was 20 degrees, and with wind chill, like, it's pretty cold. And so you have to dress appropriately, and the summer can be really hot. And that's just, you have to prepare for your day. And that's just a little tiny thing. I check the tires and, you know, to make sure there's air in there. Okay, well, that's great. But those little things make sure that I'm preparing myself for the day. You know, I check my calendar to make sure that I can bike and I don't have anywhere else to be. And so that's just part of me, you know. So I get up early, bike to work. I'm in my office most of the day. I have lunch. And then at 3 o'clock, I get out of my office and I walk the halls. We have 5 stories here. And so I walk each hall because I got to get out of my chair once in a while. And so that's, you know, that's, I was told, is a good way to do it. Plus you get to see people, talk to people, and kind of get a feel for the courthouse every day, you know, if you do it that way. And so That's my thing. You know, the other big thing for me is I feel like you're either making a living or making a difference. And so if I'm outside of my office, I can perhaps make more of a difference. You mentioned service and serving others. And you mentioned the Ziegler quote. You know, I'm in Rotary and I meet in Rotary. Our motto is service above self. So it fits with my concept of service. The other thing is that I taught for 20 years. And if you really, I taught appellate practice and procedure. So I taught appellate law at UD Law for 20 years and talk about a growth experience and learning something new every year. But it's also that motto, give away everything you know. And so that's what I try to do, you know, every class. And I'm sure some, you know, didn't find that was very helpful, but that's the way I tried to do it. I like that old quote, you know, if I had 8 hours to chop down a tree, I'd spend 7 hours sharpening the blade. That's me. You know, that's me, because not everything works that we think will work. And right now my preparation isn't about sports like it did 35 years ago. It's a long time ago. It's more about presentations. So I give continuing legal education to lawyers and to judges. And when those opportunities come up, I jump on them. I consider myself an introvert, by the way, because I don't get energy from that crowd. It really wears me out, but I love the preparation part. And I like to see if that hour of time that I'm giving to the audience resonates, that there's a connection. Sometimes there is, sometimes there isn't. We all have had a bad game, so to speak. And I've had a bad presentation too. Like that didn't go the way it was supposed to or the way I thought it would. But it's not because I just thought of it. It's because I had prepared for it and it just didn't hit like I thought. And so I'd try again. You know, you just fall down 7 times, get up 8, right? And you just keep trying and until you figure out what works. But I think that's part of it is I don't mind sharing what I know, because when I do that, I learn even more. And so that's a big part of my service. I think that's how I can serve is by being sort of an outreach person for the court and say, this is what we do as Court of Appeals judges, because not many people know, because they never see us. We don't have juries here. And so, you know, I'm willing to do that. I also like the idea that leadership, if you consider being a judge, being a leader, leadership is not a privilege to do less, but a responsibility or an obligation to do more. And so, you know, I've joined other organizations, and if the leadership position comes up, you know, I said I can do it, or if it's been offered to me. And I can't tell you that I always was always that way. Again, I think this is just part of perhaps getting ready for an empty nest with my wife and I. Like, what else are we going to do? And so I might as well start getting involved in more organizations and take some leadership roles if I have the time to do it. Because I also recognize that if I've joined something and it's not a good fit, then I need to then step away, because it's better to not join an organization if you can't contribute. But at the same time, it's worth trying, because, you know, if you try something new, you either have success or you have a story. So I have a lot of stories.
I like that. I've never heard of that. A lot of times I'll say, you know, we never lose. We either win or we learn. But I like that, you know, hey, you either going to have a success or a story. And aren't some of the best stories the ones where we messed it all up, you know? And I always say there's two forms of wisdom. There's the wisdom where, you know, we learn from our own mistakes. But the best wisdom is where we can learn from someone else's mistakes. That's why I'm such an avid reader and podcast listener and, you know, and just wanting to learn and consume, to be like, oh, you know what? I didn't know that. I'm glad I listened to that, because I won't make that mistake. I wish I would have had some of the marriage wisdom that I have today, you know, early on, you know, for those who know kind of my marriage stories. And a great friend of mine, Tim Goad, said, if you want to impress men, tell them about your successes. But if you want to empower men, tell them about your messes, you know. And it's the moment that we can be real, we can be vulnerable, and we can say, hey, let me tell you about this. And they're like, yeah, that really happened? It's like, yep. So I like that. You know, you either have success or you have a story. That's really good. So Chris, you know, you mentioned leadership, right? And I love what you said. You made a couple different quotes there. I mean, in your position, you know, because obviously, you know, from an attorney to a judge to, you had mentioned, you know, with the second, the Court of Appeals, you know, for those of our listening, you know, because I didn't really know it. I did a little research beforehand, but what is the difference between just being like maybe a judge in a typical courtroom, you know, setting to being in the Court of Appeals? What's the difference there, if you wouldn't mind sharing on that?
Yeah, so there are trial courts. And so I'm in the state court system. There's the federal system, which is parallel, but the state court system has about 645 trial judges throughout the state. There are 69 appellate judges through 12 different districts. And then there's 7 Ohio Supreme Court justices. So each, there are 12 districts. We're in the second district, which includes 6 counties, and there are 5 judges, and it's based on population. But we always have 3 judge panels during the week. And what that means is 3 of us are working that week or in court that week. We're always working on opinions. But you don't see too many TV shows about the Court of Appeals, because some may think it's boring, because you're writing briefs. You're basically writing, and then you're making an argument. The lawyers are. Where the excitement in the theater takes place is in the trial court. That's where you're trying to impress a jury to side with your client, and there's a lot more interest in that. But if someone loses a trial and they want to appeal, they appeal to the Court of Appeals. And so that's where I am. And then if they want to appeal our case, they have to appeal to the Ohio Supreme Court. But the Supreme Court doesn't have to take every case. They take maybe 5 or 6% of the cases or something like that. But in the Court of Appeals, you have a right to appeal any adverse decision, provided that it's a final appealable order. So we're, you know, it's a little bit more cerebral. We're not interacting with lawyers too often unless they request oral argument. And then they have 15 minutes to make an argument in front of us. And so when I taught this class at UD Law, we set it up that way. We'd draft a simulation or a case, and then we'd give it to the students, and they would spend the semester writing a brief. We'd go through each part of that with them, and then they'd culminate with an oral argument. And we'd bring attorneys from town into the court, into the school, and there'd be the 3 judge panel, the 3 attorneys, and we just ask them questions for 15 minutes. And so we thought it was practical. Then once you graduated past the bar, you could make an argument in front of the Court of Appeals because you took that class. That was the theory. But to me, that's what I know. This is sort of my passion. It's what I know. I can't say that I would necessarily be a very good trial judge. I don't know. You're thinking much more quickly as a trial judge. Objection, and you got to decide. Here, we're reviewing briefs, and we have time to look it up and get the right, what we think is the right decision. And then with 3 of us per week, we vote on it. So it's 3-0 or 2-1. And then we write the opinion. So that's what we do in the Court of Appeals. You have to have a really broad background to work here, I think, because we hear criminal cases, civil cases, juvenile, domestic relations, probate, administrative hearings. We hear all those different type of cases. And I think if you came in simply just saying, well, I'm a lawyer, without much experience in those areas, it'd be a difficult job, in my opinion. And I don't know what value you can bring to the court if you didn't have that experience. And so thankfully, I had plenty of stories, as we mentioned, because I took a lot of different kind of cases and tried them out and narrowed down maybe a more of a field for me. But I really enjoyed helping people or serving people. So if they came in, if a family came in with a problem, I'd like to try to help solve it. And sometimes that means referring it to someone else because it would be out of my field or out of my range of knowledge or something I just didn't have a passion about.
I think, you know, a lot of my audience are just, you know, everyday, you know, people, a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of men. Although I have realized recently in the last month or two that there's a lot of women who listen to my podcast, which is awesome. I think that's probably because I brought my wife on 2 or 3 episodes and she's a way bigger star than I am. But I got to ask the question because in my world, you know, when I think of law, when I think of, you know, kind of those things, I think of the TV shows, right? You know, and what's on there. And so are there any shows that you're like, hey, I'm actually a fan of that? I don't watch a ton of TV, but, you know, I have to admit, you know, I kind of fell in love with watching some Suits and The Lincoln Lawyer a little bit, you know, and my wife has always said, Kurt, like, you would be a great attorney. You would be a great defense attorney because you always like to argue your case. You know what I mean? So do you have any of those that you're a fan of by any chance or is that not, you know, things that you're interested in?
we don't watch a ton of TV at our house either, but when I do presentations, one of my goals is Well, number one, not to be boring. And number two, it makes you think about something. You may not learn anything, but at least you think about something I said over an hour or two. And the way I do that is through pictures and movie clips. So A Few Good Men, Legally Blonde might get in there. My Cousin Vinny, that's one of my favorites to show, just a few courtroom scenes. There is one U.S. Supreme Court case called The People versus Larry Flint, or that's the movie. But he argues in front of 9 U.S. Supreme Court justices. And so sometimes, at least for my class, I used to play that because it's similar to, although 9 instead of 3, you're at a podium making an argument. So I will show those movie clips to different organizations or groups for a reason. On the other hand, sometimes my wife and I will watch like Northwood's Law and those type of shows to see how the officers or conservation officers or whomever, you know, do their job and treat the citizens that they work with. And we'll learn something new from that. But we just don't watch a lot of TV at our house. We're pretty busy doing other things.
Yeah, especially in the evening, right? If you're getting up at 4:30, you know, I always tell sometimes when the guys will say like, Kurt, I don't understand how you get up at 5:30 in the morning. And I'm like, just get up one morning at that time. And trust me, you won't stay up until midnight that night, because come 8:30, you know, you'll be tired and you'll want to go to bed, right? So, you know, I always say a great day, a good morning starts the night before, you know, in, you know, and going to bed. So that's awesome. So, from a perspective of where you're at right now in this, you know, kind of season of life, right? You know, because like you just said, you know, I kind of feel like I'm in a similar season. Our kids are getting ready to graduate. They're older, you know, getting ready to be empty nesters. You know, what about that excites you? Because, you know, it's like, man, you know, when we talk about life and we talk about the champion life and our faith being important, I know that you're involved in your church. You know, obviously you and your wife are doing different things. Like, what does that next season look like for you? What are a couple of the things that you're excited about in kind of that next season of life?
Well, I'm excited to see what that change looks like. You know, both our kids will be in college, so our goal would be to visit them and when we can and see what they do. I also like to think that I haven't lived a life of regret, but rather of experience. So I know that my wife are not saying anything like this, like, well, when the kids are gone, we're going to do this, because we're doing this now, whatever yes. that may be. We are living the life that we want to live right now. We're in the moment. You know, it's almost, I like that idea that if you're trying to win the day or win the moment, you know, you think what's important now? That's win. And so we don't have any like future hopes in that sense. We're not trying to push the kids out of our lives, because they will always be in our lives. But at the same time, we're going to have an acknowledgement that next year we're going to look at each other and it's going to be 6 o'clock at night. We're not going to a sporting event. So, you know, we'll figure out what that may look like. And I hope it's more fellowship, more involvement in organizations. We'll find some things to do. But, you know, I think we'll be ready for it. But we don't know what it looks like, but I know that we're excited to see what the next day is, but I think we do try to enjoy each moment. I really do. So we don't really talk about it, but it's around the corner. Frankly, we're excited to see what happens with our children, with our kids. Well, they're not, I don't know if they're kids. They're both voters now, you know, being a judge, I get elected. So it's fun to have them vote for me, but, that, you know, it's fun to see what's going to happen. And so I don't know what it's going to look like. We don't have any plans. There's no great trip we're going to do, because, you know, we just don't live like that. We're doing what we want to do right now.
Yeah, I love that. It's the mindset of like, why wait till tomorrow to live today, right? And you know, you work out and you're riding, you're cycling, you know, and you know, you take care of your health. I'll sometimes say, because that's my background, is coming from the fitness industry and, you know, and things of that nature, is I always say, like, why wait till you get sick to be healthy? You know, it's why wait till, you know, tomorrow, you know, to live. Like, we're like every day, you know, when I wake up, before I roll out of bed, I'm immediately just saying, you know, like, God, thank you for today, because I have this like life is a what? And some people fill in the blank. Life is a whatever. And it's like, for me, like, life's an adventure. And I live life like when I was in second grade, I just remember for some reason being that little kid going on those field trips. And a field trip day was different than a normal day of school, right? It was like you got a special kind of packed lunch and you got to ride a bus somewhere and you didn't know where you're going. And you know, and there was, you know, a lot of times for me, I was always the chaperone dad. I always went on the field trips with my kids. I mean, because it was like reliving that season of my life as a little kid. But I was so excited. And it's like, I want to have that attitude every single day in my life of, I don't know what's going to happen today, but I'm just excited about it, you know, and man, like that's the way to live. And so I love to hear like, hey, you know, we're living that life right now. We don't have to wait until the kids go. We don't have to wait until, you know, retirement, right? Some people say, oh, when I'm retired, I'll do this, I'll do that. It's like, you're not guaranteed today, right? Like I want to live it as a blessing. So I love to hear your perspective and your attitude on that. So I got a question for you. So one last question here, Chris, is what is the greatest lesson that you feel like you've learned in your lifetime? We got a lot of people that tune into this podcast. They've heard you now. They've heard some of the stuff you've talked about, the way you live, the disciplines, the things you focus on. If you could say, hey, Kurt, here's one major lesson that I've learned over the years that I feel would be so imperative to help people do life at a higher level, have success, however people define that. But for you, what would you say is one of the greatest life lessons that you've learned that you feel so valuable that you want your wife to know, your kids to know, the people that know you to know, and especially our Champion Life audience?
That's pretty easy for me. I like this statement, EQ greater than IQ. I'm not good at math. I put that little greater sign in there though. EQ is greater than IQ. That's what I go with. Emotional intelligence, your empathy, your compassion, your feeling for other people, I think is greater than IQ. And I say that because I have to go with that. I don't have the greatest IQ. I never got straight A's, you know? So I have to go with the emotional part. And I think I can keep getting better at it. I can keep smiling to someone because someone, maybe that's the best thing they get all day is a smile from you or hello, opening the door or doing something nice for someone else. So I really kind of studied emotional intelligence over the past, I don't know, a couple of years and said, well, that fits with me rather than being Mensa or being somebody on the high IQ scale, because that's what's important. You know, in my job, we're, you know, people have a dispute. We're helping settle that dispute based on law. The law is this, and this is what your dispute is. Well, this is what we're going to do. And so we really do treat people, I think, with respect here in the court, both in our written opinions and the way we are in the courtroom. And I'm blessed that happens here. I work with four other judges, of course. I'm grateful that we have that kind of attitude here because it fits with my personality. You know, past summer, I went to NYU. There were 64 appellate judges from across the state, both state and federal, and there were some state Supreme Court justices for a seminar, 64 of us for a week long at NYU. It was fantastic. And so there are some really highly educated people there, right, from some very nice East Coast schools. And I just introduced myself as, hey, I'm just a guy from Dayton. You know, because it didn't matter. It didn't matter where you were from, where you went to school. So I wrote a note to the leader of the program. He'd been there. He'd been an NYU law professor since 1978. And I wrote him a thank you note because it was great. I've been to some kind of slow continuing ed programs. This was a week long. The people were great. And so I wrote, thanked him. I really enjoyed it. And then I wrote that EQ greater sign IQ. And then I also wrote, I'd love to come back and teach one of your classes. I'm just a Dayton guy, but I would teach it from the EQ point of view, not like, oh, not really digging into the highly, highly educated folks. And there's nothing wrong with that because I got to go with something. So I think we can always improve the emotional intelligence, how we treat others. I think we can. I believe that, you know, the rising tide lifts all boats. I do believe that, you know, when you give away everything, you know, you're helping somebody else out and you're helping yourself out. It's what you started with on that quote. You know, if we give people what they want, you know, something comes back to us. When I was in Rotary, I was Rotary president last year, and I themed the year Kindness Gives Back. And what I meant by that is when you give out kindness, it comes back to you. Some people may interpret it like, well, it's like giving back to your community. No, no, I'm saying you give out the kindness and maybe, just maybe, it's going to come back to you. Because it's important. You know, I'm a note writer. I wrote you a note and I did it purposely because it made me feel good. It made me feel good to write a note to somebody else to thank them. And I hope it made them feel good when they received it. I don't know if it did. I know it made me feel good because you spent time doing a podcast or preparing a presentation. And sometimes that goes thankless. Sometimes the audience is like, okay, I had to be here for an hour. That's it. Thank you. And then they go on their way. So I made myself, I wrote a thank you note to every single presenter at my Rotary Club when I was president. Just three lines. Thank you for preparing. I enjoyed the presentation and really appreciate it. Have a great weekend. And so I think that's really, when I say, when your initial question was, well, what have you learned? I wasn't always like that. Yeah, I wasn't always nice to people. You know, I don't know. I tried to be, but it's more so important to me now than it's ever been. You know, one other story, I was in Canton last weekend for the state swim championships and I was by myself and I went to a tavern and they had a senior menu, 55 and over. That's me. I ate off the senior menu. I didn't know that. And it was a small fish stick.
did you get a discount? Do you get a discount on the senior menu? Like,
well, I think you got less food. I don't know.
it's like the kids' meal, but it's the senior version, right? You know,
that's exactly what it was. I was like, I'm gonna do this just because I can.
That is hilarious. That is awesome. Well, you know, Chris, you know, I love, because I can so align with that. You know, for me, my wife says this all the time, like, Kirk, keep it simple. You know, like, you know, when I let my 1.3 GPA, I didn't graduate high school. You know, I feel like if I went back to school now, I would be excellent, you know, because of who I am today. I'm a different person today than I was growing up just because of my upbringing and all those different things. But a lot of times it's just you keeping things simple. So, Chris, one of the things that you said earlier, which is one of my favorite quotes that I believe is so true, is that people very rarely remember what you say, but they always remember how you make them feel. And, you know, you said that earlier, when you make people feel a certain way, the last thing they're worried about is your credentials. The last thing they're worried about was, you know, your IQ, you know, all those different things. They're just seeing who you are, what you stand for, the person that you are. So I think that is incredible. So here's the last question. You know, you do have, you know, an election coming up, right, in March. You know, some people may listen to this afterwards. I'm going to encourage anybody who listens to this podcast, who tunes in for me as a viewer, to let them know that I certainly will be, you know, voting for Chris. And the reason why is because of all the reasons you heard today on this podcast. It's not about what he does vocationally. It's about who he is as a man, as a leader. And I don't know a lot about politics. I don't know a lot about law and the Court of Appeals, but what I do know is people. And, you know, and I want to associate myself with people of character, of integrity, who are living life right, who are living the champion life. And Chris, that's why I wanted to have you on the podcast today. That's why I reached out a month ago, you know, to just say, hey, I was thinking about you, because the things that you do and the way that you live are rare, like the personal notes, you know, to take the time to write a personal note that, yes, you get something out of that. But also, man, there's just something when I read that note, you know, and what I always love to create in life is win-wins. And when we can do something that makes us feel good, but then it also makes somebody else feel good, like that is a win, you know, win, even something as simple as a smile. And so I just want to thank you for living your life with that character and that integrity, especially in, you know, the position that you do hold and the things that you do have control over in people's lives that are at stake, you know, and different things that are important, that that you live life with integrity and character. So, man, I'm just grateful and thankful for that and for the time that we've been able to spend today. And, you know, man, you got my vote, my family's vote for sure. And if somebody would want some more information about that, if they find that, I mean, where could they go to? Where can they find more information about you, Chris? I mean, is there a place that somebody can go? You know, go ahead and share that on here real quick before we wrap up.
Yeah, sure. www.electepley.com, and that's E-P-L-E-Y. I also have a Facebook page, Chris Epley for Court of Appeals, that has a lot of activity on it, just kind of a day-to-day thing of what I'm doing throughout the week and month and so forth. You know, campaigning is always an interesting process. You just don't know what's going to happen on election day. But I also think that it can be a challenge, and challenges are what make life interesting. But it's overcoming those challenges that makes life meaningful. So I think, you know, that this is the position I'm in. This is the field that I'm playing on. It's what we do. It's part of the process. I love what I do. I have a passion for what I do. And so, you know, you have to get elected to stay in the position. And that's our democracy. And that's all right. And I try to approach any new thing with a beginner's mind. So if I'm learning, every place I go to, I meet new people or learn something new about it, you know, it's going to be okay. You know, everything's going to be okay.
I love that. I love that. Well, guys, you know, this has been an awesome episode. I've definitely learned a lot. I've got a lot of awesome takeaways. Chris, I hope that we have a success and a story, you know, coming up, you know, here in March, so that you can continue to live out your passion. No, I'm rooting for you, man. And it's been an honor and a privilege to have you on here today with me, man. So I appreciate your time and thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you, Kurt. I really enjoyed it. I appreciate you giving me the opportunity and giving me the time today.
Well, guys, you guys heard it. The Champion Life Podcast. Thank you for tuning in. Go out, make sure you vote in March for Chris, and you know, give him that encouragement, send him that message on Facebook or whatever. And as always, guys, you know, we have this podcast for one reason. It's to encourage you to do life at a higher level, to live that champion life that God has for you. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode. God bless. Thank you so much for listening to the Champion Life Podcast. I hope that you learned a thing or two that can help you create the champion life that you desire and that God has for you. Now, before you go, I have one ask. If this episode resonated with you in any way, I want to hear about it. Please shoot me a personal message on Facebook at Kurt Tucker or Instagram at Kurt D. Tucker. Stay tuned for the next episode, my friend. And as always, keep growing and keep going. Facebook or whatever. And as always, guys, you know, we have this podcast for one reason. It's to encourage you to do life at a higher level, to live that champion life that God has for you. So thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode. God bless. Thank you so much for listening to the Champion Life Podcast. I hope that you learned a thing or two that can help you create the champion life that you desire and that God has for you. Now, before you go, I have one ask. If this episode resonated with you in any way, I want to hear about it. Please shoot me a personal message on Facebook at Kurt Tucker or Instagram at Kurt D. Tucker. Stay tuned for the next episode, my friend. And as always, keep growing and keep going.